we're in lesson number 29 in the book of Judges, and I want to ask you to open up your Bible with me to Judges chapter 15. Now, as we open the pages of Judges chapter 15, the story of the detail of Samson's traumatic marriage fiasco just gets worse. Samson had paid the debt to the 30 men who answered his riddle before the deadline, if you will remember. And he had gone home to his parents, probably to cool off, as we talked about in the last lesson. Then he decided to return to Timnah to be with his wife. And upon the arrival to the house where his father-in-law lives and his wife was, that arrival will rekindle the trauma once again. So in verse number 1 of chapter number 15, it is time for the wheat harvest. We do not know the year. We do not know Samson's age. We do not know. What we do know is that Samson is married. We know that on the 14th day of Samson's marriage, that his riddle was answered. And on that day, he discovered his wife had been influenced by the Philistine friends of her. We know that he had gone to Ashkelon to settle the debt that he owed by killing 30 men and taking their linen wraps and their clothes. We know he paid the debt and then went home to his parents' home in Zorah for a while. We know from verses 1 and 2 that we are about to read that he decided to return to his wife. But upon reaching his father-in-law's home, where he expected his wife to be, a surprise was revealed. In the shock of seeing Samson at his doorstep asking for his wife, the father-in-law did the sidestep, as we might call it. So let's pick up with the sidestep of the father-in-law in chapter 15 in verse number 1. But after a while, in the time of the wheat harvest, Samson visited his wife with a young goat and said, "I will go into my wife in her room." But her father did not let him enter. Her father said, "I really thought that you hated her intensely, so I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please let her be yours instead." Dealing with the first part of the passage, we hear the writer tell us that it was the time for the winter wheat. Now that meant that it was June. You see, back in those days, we had not modified wheat to grow at any other time but the natural time, and the wheat was planted just before winter, and it was allowed to grow through the winter and was harvested in June. It's called winter wheat. So moving on in the passage, surely the father was startled when Samson arrived at the door. Was Samson's wife in the house? We don't know. She may have been, and that is why the father did not let him enter, as the passage says. Instead, the father does what I call a sidestep when he offers the younger daughter. Three things are apparent here. The father was wrong in giving his daughter away, and he knew that. The father was afraid of Samson, and we know that. But the father was willing to try to make the wrong right, as we see him do in the passage. So the father's words brought the reaction of Samson upon him and upon others. And we see that in verse number 3. I call it the reaction. Samson then said to them, "This time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm." Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches and turned the fox's tail to tail and put one torch in the middle between two tails. When he had set fire to the torches, he released the foxes into the standing grain of the Philistines, thus burning up both the shocks and the standing grain, along with the vineyards and the groves. So where did Samson get 300 foxes? We spoke about this back in chapter 14 when Samson was attacked by the lion in the vineyard. According to the Song of Solomon chapter 2 and verse 15, it says this. Solomon wrote, "Catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that are ruining our vineyards while our vineyards are in blossom." It is known that the foxes would dig their holes and their dens in the ground of the vineyards. Jackals were also there too in dens in the vineyards. What is the difference between a fox and a jackal? First, they're both members of the canine family of mammals, the dog-like carnivorous animals. Both are often referred to as dogs. Second, both hunt as individual animals. They do not hunt in packs like wolves do. Third, the dens will have at least two entrances. And down in these tunnels, they have rooms that they have dug that they use to store food. And they also use those rooms to give birth to their young and raise them until they can safely come out of the dens. The way they get them to come out of the dens is they place a little food away from where their little hole is. They come out to eat that. They go back in. Then they come on up the tunnel a little further and put a little more food. They come out. And then you'll see finally the mother will put food just outside the entrance to the tunnel. And the little ones will finally come out into the light and learn to be outside. Rarely do adult foxes, mothers and fathers, and jackals, rarely do they sleep in the dens. Now the little ones will while they're growing up, but rarely do the adults. They will do so only in extremely hot or cold environments, but most nights they will be out in the fields. Now with that knowledge, Samson, I'm telling you, had a task to accomplish when he caught 300 foxes, because they don't run together and they don't stay in these tunnels. So he couldn't just go look for them there. He had to catch 300. He had a task. As for the fields being set on fire, the wheat was cut when the stalks were dry. Whether or not the wheat had yet been harvested did not matter. With wheat or not, in June, whether they've been harvested or not, the fields would still be dry enough to burn quickly at that time. Now, after Samson burned the fields, the Philistine investigation began. I call this the investigation in verse 6a. Then the Philistine said, "Who did this?" And they said, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he took his wife and gave her to his companion." The writer is not clear in this passage. We do not know who told the Philistines that it was Samson who burned the field. Therefore, when we look at the "they told" of this passage, it is forever unknown who they were that told these Philistines that Samson had done it. Nevertheless, as we read on in verse 6b, with the discovery that Samson burned the fields, the Philistines acted with what I call the penalty. The penalty, verse 6b. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. The very thing that Samson's wife was threatened with that would happen to her and to her family if she did not extract the answer of the riddle from Samson came upon her in the end anyway. She was burned. Her family was burned. They were murdered. Samson was horrified by the deaths of his family, and he sought justification by taking revenge. I call this verse, verse 7, the justification. Samson said to them, "Since you act like this, I will surely take revenge on you, but after that, I will quit." He struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter, and he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Etam. When the text says he struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter, it means that he killed everyone who killed his wife and her family. He killed them ruthlessly, it says. Now let us take a moment to examine Samson's life right here, okay? Let's back up. He's a Jew. We know that. He was forbidden by the Lord from marrying a foreign woman, but he did it anyway. He was also a Nazarite. He was forbidden by the Lord for having anything to do with grapes and wine, but he did it anyway. Furthermore, he was forbidden from touching anything dead, but he did it anyway. But the writer does not tell us that he made any attempt to seek forgiveness from the Lord in any way with the required offerings. What did he do? Instead of seeking forgiveness, he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Edom. Now, where is Edom? Edom was down in the tribal area of Judah, and we will see that mentioned in a verse that's coming up. Now, what is the cleft of a rock? A cleft is nothing but a hole in the rock. It is not deep enough to be considered a cave. Yet it is deep enough for Samson to be out of the weather on three sides and the top above him, but one side is open. It is literally just a place he could just slip into and maybe sit down or lie down. But it did not take long for Samson's whereabouts to become known. The Philistines went into Judah's land to camp near the cleft in the rock at Edom, at a place called Lehi. Then Judah and the Philistines talked. The leaders of Judah and the Philistines talked. Now, I call this the accusation in verse number 9. Then the Philistines went up and camped in Judah and spread out in Lehi. The men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" And they said, "We have come up to bind Samson in order to do him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom and said to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, so I have done to them." They said to him, "We have come down to bind you so that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines." And Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not kill me." So they said to him, "No, but we will bind you fast and give you into their hands. Yet surely we will not kill you." Then they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. We do not know where Edom stood. We do not know. We cannot find that cleft in the rock. We do not know where Lehi stood. It is unknown to us today. Oh, we can make a guess, but we don't know. All we know is that they were in the tribal area of Judah. Now look at this. Can you imagine 3,000 cousins of Samson coming up to the cleft of the rock to bind him and give him to the Philistines? And Samson played along with his cousins and let them bind him. Oh, but Samson must have had a plan. Once in the right place, once at the right time, the assault would occur. I call this the assault, verse number 14. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted as they met him, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were on his arms were as flax that is burned with the fire, and his bonds dropped from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, so he reached out and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. Then Samson said, "With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have killed 1,000 men." 1,000 Philistines were dead. They were killed by Samson and the jawbone of a donkey. Thus, more dead were added to the tally that this Nazarite had touched and was forbidden to touch. Even after a great victory, as Samson had had over the Philistines, tired from the battle, even Samson had a doubt, as we do. When we go through something that is traumatic, we often have doubts. Notice what he said to the Lord in verse 19, and I call this the doubt. When he had finished speaking, he threw the jawbone from his hand, and he named that place Ramoth Lehi. Then he became very thirsty, and he called to the Lord and said, "You have given me this great deliverance by the hand of your servant, and now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Had Samson died and his body fallen into the hands of the Philistines, I'm going to tell you what they would have done with him, because we know they would have beheaded him. They would have hung his body on a wall for the birds and the animals to come and eat off of as a symbol of shame and disgrace. His head would have been put on a pole as an exhibit. But that was not Samson's situation. It was just his question that was spawned by his thirst. Are you going to let me die and fall into the Philistines' hands? Now Samson asked for water from God, and God answered to help with Samson's recovery from thirst. I call this verse, verse number 19, the recovery. But God split the hollow place that is in Lehi so that the water came out of it. And when he drank, his strength returned and he revived. Therefore he named it En Hakkor, which is in Lehi to this day. So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. God answered Samson with a miracle. This is a miracle that we often missed and we rarely hear about it. All we hear about when the rock split with Moses and water came forth. All we hear about when the second rock split with Moses and the water came forth. But we don't hear about this rock that God splits and water comes forth to soothe Samson's thirst. It's the third time in the Bible that a rock is split to bring forth water. Samson named the place En Hakkor, and it means spring or fount of the caller. In other words, it is intended to mean the place where Samson called and God answered with a spring or a fount of water. Now the passage ends with the number of years that Samson judged in the days of the Philistines. I want you to notice that Samson had not conquered the Philistines, as all the other judges in the book had. Rather, he judged during the rule of the Philistines over the nation of Israel, during the time they were ruling. We do not know when his 20-year period began. We do not know when the 20-year period started in this storyline that we're reading. However, one thing we do know is that we do know when his judging will end. We can derive one thing from this verse, verse number 20. The writer told us the length of Samson's time as judge after verse number 20, but before chapter 16, verse 1 begins. And we know that it had to be a multiple of years, and not soon after verse 20. It could not have happened right after verse 20 when he killed the 1,000 men. Could not be there. It went on for a while. So with the turn of the verse, we come to chapter number 16. Once again, we must mention that we have lost all sense of timing. And where we were in the storyline, we do not know in this 40 years of the Philistine oppression. And as indicated, we don't know Samson's age. What we do know is he was a married man, but his wife was given to the best man at his wedding for a wife while Samson was calming down at his parents' house in Zorah. We also know that his wife was murdered along with her parents at the family home. In addition, we know that Samson had some sort of preference for Philistine women over Israelite women, and at that point, that brings us to a sordid adventure that Samson took over in the Philistine area and visited and a visit to a Philistine harlot in Gaza. Chapter number 16, verse number 1. Now Samson went to Gaza and saw a harlot there, and he went into her. And when it was told to the Gazarites, saying, Samson has come here, they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. And they kept silent all night, saying, Let us wait until morning light, then we will kill him. Now Samson lay until midnight, and at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate and the two posts and pulled them up along with the bars. And then he put them on his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the mountain which is opposite Hebron. We do not know why Samson entered into a sexual relationship with a Philistine prostitute in the city of Gaza, but he did. It was breaking the law of the Lord to have an intimate relationship with a non-Jewish woman. In addition, it was a sin to have a relationship with a prostitute because of the action involved in the relationship that may actually made them in God's eyes husband and wife, even though the prostitute was being paid for the relationship. In the story, the word of Samson's whereabouts was leaked to the neighborhood. Such is the case in social environments like these where prostitutes are. Everyone knows everyone's business. Surely things have not changed in humanity. Surely Samson was a hot topic of business among the Philistines. No doubt, even though it was not said in the scripture, a bounty of some sort was probably on the head of this on his head. The Philistines expected him to stay all night with the prostitute, but Samson stayed only until midnight. And for some unknown reason, Samson decided to leave at midnight. And the men were not ready to kill him in the middle of the night. They were going to kill him in the morning light. Why that plan was decided upon by Samson, we do not know. The story of the prostitute was probably not the reason the writer put this story in the book, this short passage. The story of what Samson did at midnight is most likely the reason why this tale was interesting to the writer. Now, in the last part of the verse, the writer tells us of Samson's might, his power, and his vigor when he writes, And at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate and the two posts and pulled them up along with the bars. Then he put them on his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the mountain which is opposite Hebron. Why did Samson remove the gate? Do you remember our description of the gate and the guards of Jericho? How there was an outer gate and an inner gate. That the inner gate was closed and locked at sunset before the outer gate was locked later on. But by 10 o'clock, that outer gate would be locked. Gaza did not have an outer and inner gate. It only had one gate which faced east. Be that as it may, the gate was surely locked at sunset. And a guard stood on the wall to watch for those coming to get into the city late and deciding to let them in or not. Upon rising at midnight, Samson must have found the gate locked. And without the key, he simply plucked the two posts out of the ground on which the bifold doors were attached and locked together in the middle, covered with a bar and all of that. And he rested the whole thing on his back, on his shoulders, between his shoulders. And he, about shoulder high, he had it up, probably leaned over, and he walked all the way from the city to a place called Hebron. Gaza sits on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. Its elevation starts at sea level, and its highest point is 46 feet above sea level. Highest little hill there in Gaza. Starts at sea level. The mountain which is opposite Hebron, get this, is 37 miles from Gaza. And the top of the mountain is 3,050 feet above sea level. Let us put this in perspective. Suppose Samson was standing at Stewart Beach at the waterline in Galveston, Texas. Suppose it was there that he plucked this gate out of the ground and secured it on his shoulders. Then he walked up the Gulf Freeway for 37 miles and dropped the whole gate assembly in the middle of downtown Houston. Let that give you an idea of the distance. However, Samson did not have a nice concrete flat roadway to walk on. In fact, there was no public roads that went directly from Gaza to Hebron in those days. The roads that were in place would have taken Samson about 52 miles on a trip instead, going around by the roads. Nevertheless, Samson, being Samson, probably walked due east over the low mountain rise first and then down to the next little valley and over the second mountain rise that was there. It's a little bit higher and then the first and into a little less of a valley that comes next and then up this major climb, 3,000 feet up to the top of the mountains of Hebron to deposit the gate assembly on the top of the mountain in front of the city of Hebron. The elevation of that mount is 3,050 feet high from the sea level in Gaza. Samson carried that whole assembly at least 37 miles, but he also carried it uphill, almost two-thirds of a mile high. And the writer did not tell us that the Holy Spirit came upon him mightily with some supernatural strength to do this like everything else. This deed that Samson did was on his own without the help of the Holy Spirit. Surely it was for the purpose that the writer included this deed of Samson in the text to show his strength. It was to prove the raw strength and vitality that Samson was blessed with naturally. Samson was not through with women, by the way. The writer now tells us about a Philistine woman who lived down in the valley of Sorek, back in the Timnah area, and she is the woman that we all remember being with Samson. She's the third woman at least, and her name was Delilah.